If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
But you know, basically, I grew up in the wine business. Well, like it or not, that's how I grew up.
First of all, consider that to can say that a grape variety is doing well in a specific vineyard, you need a generation minimum. Yeah.
I've had some great experiences. That's the fun part. You get to find these things. And you don't always have to drink a $50 bottle. You can find a great $12 bottle that's like, wow, that's amazing.
A lot of people think that you just grow the grapes, pick them, throw it in a tank and stomp on the grapes and hey presto, you've got wine. If it were only that simple, It's not.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 452. This week we feature Vino Lingo, a look back. Our Vino Lingo and Vino Lingo video segments have been very popular with our subscribers. Thank you very much. With that in mind, we take a trip back to the start of these wine words, back to the year 2016, and give a listen to voices from the past. Learning about wine is fun, and Vino Lingo makes it more funnerer. Yeah.
My name is Melissa Burr, director of winemaking here at Stiller Family Estate. And the question is, what words define wines sometimes? And so there's a lot of words for a wine that's stinky that we use as winemakers, and some of them are kind of fun to throw around. But basically what we're looking for is any kind of sulfide issues that might occur in wine from various reasons, so we can mitigate them. So that is something that pops up for us at times, is ways to define stinky wines. Not that I've ever had any, but if I did.
I'm Nick Bleeker, the winemaker here at Jericho Canyon. My Vino Lingo word is going to be topping. A topping is an action, I guess, you'll do in the cave. Pretty much monthly if you want to keep your wine safe. The barrels are always porous, of course, and evaporating. You lose wine generally over time. And if you don't replace that wine in the barrel, you're going to have a larger and larger headspace. With that headspace, you can have a lot of dissolved oxygen come in and bacterial growth, which is exactly what you don't want to happen in wine. So you keep stainless steel kegs for the most part around the winery. And from those, which of course do not have any evaporation, and from there you will top the wine barrels to raise the level of the wine back up to the bunghole.
My name is Pam Starr, and I am the owner, founder, and winemaker of Crocker & Starr Winery. My business partner is Charlie Crocker. He owns this fantastic estate here in St. Helena. And when we do research of planting a new block, we do what's called soil profiling. And it's where we get a backhoe and we dig 6 feet down. And we hire a soil scientist to come in and pull pieces of soils from every 12 inches. We assess the girth and length and the quantity of roots throughout the entire profile. So if you start at soil level, visually what you see, and then as you drop down into the soil 6 feet, that's the profile. Where do rocks begin? Where does the clay start? Is there any modeling? How much sand is involved? It's really fun.
My name is Tom Birdsall. I'm co-owner with my wife of Black Kite Cellars, a specialist in Pinot Noir and Chardonnay here in Sonoma County. And the term I'd like to talk a little bit about is the clone, a term for the type of Pinot Noir grape or Chardonnay grape. It's a little bit akin to roses. You have different types of roses that have been developed over the years. And I think as we've learned more about wine and winemaking, we've learned a lot about clones, and it's sort of a funny term. You wouldn't talk about clones, and except in the old days about cloning sheep or cloning humans. But I think it's a term that you get to know and love a little bit in the winemaking business. But what's fun in some ways is how these clones get their names. Some of them have pretty boring names. Dijon 114, Pommard. I mean, I love the Pommard clone, from named after Pommard in the Burgundy, a small village in Burgundy, France. But probably the favorite story you may have heard of is there's a clone that we buy fruit from down in the San Lucia Highlands. And one of the growers down there is Gary Pizzoni, And Gary is a great guy, a big heart, and a bit of a character. And there's a clone named after him. It's called the Pizzoni clone. In fact, we make some tremendous, what we think is tremendous quality Pinot Noir from that clone. But that was not the first name for the clone. Gary went over to Burgundy, and he borrowed some clippings from a famous vineyard. And I won't name the vineyard, but it's the most considered the most famous Burgundian vineyard in the world. And he brought it back, and he started calling the clone by the initials DRC, if you know Burgundy. And it started calling it the DRC clone. And they weren't happy about that. But it stopped calling it the DRC clone, then it became the Pizzoni clone.
Colleen Sepps Williams, Storybook Mountain Vineyards. And we use Van Bonnick's at our winery, which is just our fun little language of, whatever words we want to call different equipment. And if we don't know what it's called, we make it up. Like, for instance, our rosé of Bordeaux varietals, I call Borzé. So, and then, again, the reducers for the hoses that I didn't know what that was called originally, so I called them cones. You know, bring me a cone. So, you know, we knew what we were talking about.
Okay, I'm Don Hagee. Vidon Vineyard is my winery and vineyard here in Oregon. The vino lingo I remember most from my early days is tractor blight, which is the disease caused by not steering correctly between narrow rows of vines and sometimes having to go back and repair line posts and vines.
My name's Darren DeBordley. I'm the winemaker at DeBordley Wines. We're famous for our botrytis-infected wines. When I say botrytis, it's actually what we call noble rot, technically called Botrytis cinerea, and it's a fungus that grows on the grapes. It sucks the moisture out, and as it does, it changes the flavors and concentrates the sugars and makes these absolutely world-class sweet white wines.
Hi, my name is Laura Barrett. I'm the winemaker for Cliff Family Winery. And the word that we use regularly is beechy, and it's spelled B-I-C-I, and that is the word for bicycle in Italian, and it's the name of our red Rhone blend.
So my name's Justin Seidenfeld. I'm the winemaker at Rodney Strong Vineyards in Sonoma County, California. And the word I'm going to discuss is batonnage, which is a French term which means the stirring of the lees. So lees are the solids and the dead yeast cells that fall to the bottom of the barrel. And we do this process of stirring that up by hand, not by machine, where it brings those lees back into the solution of the wine, adds creaminess, it acts as an antioxidant so we can use less sulfur to protect the wine, and it makes the wine fresher and brighter and more full in body. Batonnage.
Okay, I'm Randy Lang of Lang Twins, based in Lodi, California, and we use a term within our family called generational farming. Generational farming really means it's really an addition to sustainable farming, because the reality is generational farming is taking a look at the property that you have the honor to farm. And also, as how was it farmed? What did my great-grandfather do to the land? What did my father do to my grandfather do to the land? And taking a look at it and saying, what is the right thing to do? And we've taken vineyard out and restored habitat in areas that there probably should have never been vineyards. But it was in those days, they planted from property line to property line. So we've been very busy establishing habitat corridors to enhance the growing region or the growing area that we farm. And you do these things because you're thinking fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth. I'm fourth generation. My children are fifth. My grandchildren are sixth. And I'm thinking about the seventh, eighth, and ninth generation when I talk about the generational farming that we're doing.
So I'm Chris Madrigal with Madrigal Family Winery, and my wine word is madrigal. You know, growing up, nobody could pronounce it. It wasn't a very abundant last name, and you know, the true way to pronounce it is madrigal. Nobody in the United States could pronounce it that way. But madrigal is a type of music from the Renaissance, and growing up, didn't mean anything to me. You get in the wine business, and all of a sudden, it's kind of a cool last name. You know, Renaissance and music, and really neat because we've actually gone back to the original original town of Madrigal in Spain, and been able to trace my family's from Mexico, but the town of Madrigal exists, and it's a very cool place. If you ever want to go to a small town that has a lot of historical significance, it's called Madrigal de las Altas Tordes, and it's where Queen Isabella was baptized and married, so very cool, Madrigal.
Hi, I'm Kim Longbottom from Henry's Drive Vignerons in Padthaway, South Australia. I'd like to define the word vignerons. It means grape growers.
My name is Rolando Herrera, and I'm a winemaker and consulting winemaker for Mi Sueño Winery. For me, the definition of a consulting winemaker, having a complete knowledge and understanding of winemaking itself from the vineyard, taking a grape from the vineyard to the bottle, understanding its highs and lows during its fermentation peaks, during its stressful situations, and really having the experience and knowledge to solve any of those problems that might come along during the fermentation and aging of the wine. Also, another definition for that is of a great consulting winemaker is to work within a team of winemakers or consulting winemakers in sharing its experience and listening to other winemakers' subjective differences in flaws and qualities in wine, and sharing my abilities, my experience, with the goal in mind at the end to make a better wine and solve that problem that any wine is going through. And it depends on the experience of other winemakers within the team. Sometimes our most important role is really to be a role model, to be an example, to share our experience with younger winemakers, and listening to them and giving them the different options of how to solve a problem on any given wine. Again, all leads to the same thing. We all want to make the best wine possible. You know, so sometimes a great consultant, we need to be great listeners.
So my name is Enrico Valleferro. I work for a wine company called Adami, which works in the Prosecco wine growing region, which is northeast of Italy. Prosecco is the wine growing region, the name of the area where you can produce it. So Prosecco can be made only in that area, only in Italy, and only in that area. The main difference, we believe, for the qualities of the Prosecco is where you grow it, because Prosecco is pretty much one grape variety and one method. So the main aspect for the different qualities is the inclination of the soil, the kind of soil, the altitude of the vineyard, which means by fermenting separately the different vineyards, you can have Glera wines or Prosecco-based wines with different characteristics, which means more body or more minerality or a better acidity, a longer acidity. So last year, for example, out of three villages, we fermented separately 45 different spots out in 5 miles around our company. And so by doing this, we have the possibility of tasting 45 different base wines in January. And then we can make every year the best possible base spumante for the brut style, the extra dry style, and all the different labels that we do. And then once the best possible cuvée is made, we make the second fermentations continuously during the year. So small amounts, but always fresh.
My name is Alex Ryan, President and CEO of Duckhorn Wine Company. And the term that is most dear to my heart these days is wine tourism. Wine tourism is the lifestyle that people want to be part of who are not living in the industry, in which come to Napa Valley, come to Sonoma County, come to wine country, any up and down the West Coast, anywhere in the world, as a matter of fact, and experience the wine lifestyle. The wine lifestyle is more than just wine. Wine lifestyle is the food, the climate, the camaraderie, the diet. Diet food's a little different. You know, the Mediterranean component, where most great high-end luxury wines are grown around the world. And you bundle that all together, and it's an exquisite feeling and lifestyle of healthy mind, healthy conversations, healthy friendships, healthy eating and drinking. And I call it the wine lifestyle, and it is I think it's been embraced by the baby boomers. In our world, the evolution of its embracement, if that's a word, by the next most meaningful generation to follow, really is the millennials, is something that we're all cultivating. And so my hope is, if experiential lifestyle events are important to someone like millennials, or anyone for that matter, the wine lifestyle is something that you should participate in.
My name is Salvatore Avallone. I am the second generation of Avallone family involved in winemaking job. I'm the owner of Villa Matilde. Villa Matilde is an estate located in Campania region, the region of Naples, and the region also of the production area of the ancient Falerno del Massico. So Falerno was a legendary wine since Roman Imperial Age. And was very important to know that this wine was the most expensive, important wine, was considered not just a wine, but in legend in the story of winemaking in the south of Italy. He was produced, fermented, refined in the clay amphoras. Actually, also in Villa Matilde, we produce our wines fermented, aged, and refined, both in stainless steel and in amphoras. The amphoras fermentation is very important because through the microporous of clay, we have a microoxygenation of the mass and the wine, so the wine can become much more rounded and clear in the aromatic profile of the wine. We want to concentrate in a sip of our Falerno, 2,000 years of history, 2,000 years of evolution in winemaking. So we produce a modern Falerno with a lot of history in the past, a lot of ancient technique that we use also today in this type of wine, in this type of production.
My name is Wayne Bailey. I am the wine grower here at Youngberg Hill in McMinnville, Oregon. And I am going to talk to you about the word wine grower, which I just titled myself. That's, it may seem like a strange term because you don't grow wine. However, the first thing that I always like to point out is that wine is an agricultural product. So we are growing the raw product that is the only thing going into wine, which is the grape. It's also important to note that it's not just any grape, but it's a wine grape, which are varietals that have different characteristics than your normal standard table grape. Therefore, you get a wine that has many different characteristics and many different flavors than a table grape that if you made wine out of would taste like alcoholic grape juice. I also like to use the word wine grower because instead of just being in a winery as a winemaker making wine, I am growing the grapes. And so I see the product through from the time in January when we start pruning the vines all the way through harvest in October when we harvest, and then wine making in the winery into the barrel and finally into the bottle. So as a wine grower, you're not just doing one thing, you're doing everything that is going into that wine that you're tasting right now.
Hi, I'm Alexis. I'm a winemaker, a French winemaker, making wine in the southern Provence, southern French region Provence. I would like to introduce you to the term skin maceration. Berries are made out of skin and pulp inside. Pulp is a juicy part with sugar, with acids, and that's the main part of the grape. The skins have the pigments for color and fragrances as well. And while you are macerating the skins, once you've crushed the grapes with the juice, you get more or less color, depending on the time you keep your juice on the skins. More color and more flavors. That's what we call skin maceration. And depending on the temperature we do that, we get more or less color, more or less flavors. And that's a technical thing in winemaking, but very important for us in the rosé world, because color of rosé is a real big thing, and we want to choose the perfect color for our rosé.
Hi, I'm Susan Sokol-Blosser, founder of Sokol-Blosser Winery in Dundee, Oregon, and I want to tell you about the Dundee Hills. The Dundee Hills, or the Red Hills of Dundee, are, I think of it as the Côte d'Or of Oregon Pinot Noir, and one of the reasons is that it's got this wonderful Jory soil, which is a volcanic soil. It's iron rich, it's red, it's a clay loam, and it's noted for its ability to hold water so that we don't have to irrigate, and it releases it throughout the growing season. This is the best, in my opinion, the best soil in Oregon for growing Pinot Noir.
Hi, I'm Brian Maloney, and I'm the winemaker with Buena Vista. And I'm a farm boy. I grew up raising cows, sheep, pigs, chickens. And one of the interesting things about the smells of wine is a lot of them actually are pretty barnyardy and dirty. And some of them end up being good things that are going to develop out, and some of them don't. And as a winemaker, one of the things with Pinot Noir especially that I look for is, as it's developing, a little bit of a pig shit aroma. When you see a little bit of that pig shit come out, that's a good thing. When it's horse shit, you know it's Brett and you're in trouble. And so as a winemaker, I'm looking to see how shitty it is. And I think that's one of the interesting things, and maybe one of the personal things about me and how I experience wines.
Hi, I'm Victoria Angove. I'm the Joint Managing Director of Angove Family Winemakers from McLaren Vale in South Australia. And my Vino Lingo term is long game. So as a family-owned and operated wine company, we are always interested in a very long vision for our family business. We want to make decisions about everything to do with viticulture and winemaking for future generations. So my children's children and my brother's children's children. And so we're playing the long game, and that in all of our decision making really gives us focus.
I am Dave Pedersen, the winemaker at Domaine DeBroy, and my Vino Lingo word is an expression that I encountered recently from the winemaking team at Francescopolo Winery down in Geyserville. And I was preparing a wine for bottling, and the super winemaker down there that I work with most often, Francois Cordes, asked me, "Is the wine double dry?" And I said, double dry, what does that mean? And he said, "Oh, well, is it both dry for sugar and also ML, for malolactic, for malic acid?" And it was. It was wine that had been through ML and it had also been fermented completely dry. And so I was able to say, "Yes, Francois, it is double dry."
Hello, my name is Taylor Saris, and I'm with Saris Ranch, and we're in Sonoma Valley in California. And my Vino Lingo term is hat toss. And basically what that means is I'm a fifth generation rancher and farmer, and every year at the end of every harvest, there's always a hat in the last bin. And it's my dad's cowboy hat, and he throws his hat in, tosses it in, and then that means the fat lady has sung and we are done with harvest for the year.
Hi, I'm David Ramey. I'm the owner and winemaker, sort of almost, not quite emeritus, but heading that way, of Ramey Wine Cellars in Healdsburg, California. And Ray has asked me if there's a favorite wine word that I have. And I'm going to answer it in a different way. First, I'm going to steer everybody to Eric Asimov's column from Wednesday's print edition of the New York Times, where he gives some very useful wine descriptor words. And then I'm going to say the reason I like that is, at least partly, is because, and I blame it a little on UC Davis's aroma wheel of some years ago. And wine writing has devolved to coming up with as many descriptors of the wine. Oh, this is cherries, this is apricots, this is prunes, whatever it is. And I don't think that way. To me, it's not about aroma per se, unless something's wrong with the wine. I mean, if there's volatile acidity or hydrogen sulfide or acetaldehyde, that's a fault. But other than that, the aroma, to me, it's about the tactility, the mouthfeel. And so to me, the descriptors that give an impression of the mouthfeel are the good ones. And at the risk of being a little politically incorrect, I miss the days of the old Italians and the old French, often guys, who would describe wines in terms of gender. This is a feminine wine. This is a masculine wine. This is a muscular wine. This is a lithe wine. This wine is more Audrey Hepburn. This wine is more Jane Mansfield. To me, that's very descriptive. That tells me what the mouth is gonna, what it's gonna feel like in my mouth, and I just don't think people drink wine because of the way it smells. I think they drink wine because of how it feels in their palate and how it interplays with the food that they're eating.
Hi, Scott Scholl here from Raptor Ridge Winery, and we're talking about vino lingo and phrases or slogans that come up in winemaking. What we do each year during harvest is there's language that describes situations and ends up getting repeated by us and harvest interns, and then we memorialize that in a harvest t-shirt. So one from last year's harvest was make it like it didn't happen. Invariably there's, at the end of every day, there's cleanup and we say, you know, I want it like it didn't happen. Or there's an accident or a spill or a hose breaks and it's make it like it didn't happen. So make it like it didn't happen.
This is Martin Bernal Hafner. I'm the winemaker at Topel Winery up in Hopland. And the word that I'm going to go with is complexity. Complexity is used in the wine industry, but a lot of times it's kind of hard to explain because it can mean many things to many winemakers and many consumers. But I got to know the word basically when I was in France working at Chapoutier and speaking with Guillaume Poutier, who was the winemaker at the time. He really sought complexity in his wines. He didn't want a monotone, basic taste to his wines. So a lot of times he didn't just want perfectly ripe grapes. He wanted a diversity of ripeness because not extreme diversity, but he wanted, you know, certain kinds of tannins that variations in tannins and layers that made his wines distinct. Because sometimes when you have very uniform grapes and ripeness, it also gives you a monotone wine in a way. Yeah, so basically that's complexity in a nutshell, just various ripenesses that will offer many things on your palate.
My name is Alice Warnicki Sutro. I'm the owner at Sutro Wine Company, and my vino lingo is, or lingua, my wine word of the day is volcanics. And that's a terroir term, and it means, you know, what kind of soil, but I sort of have a love-hate relationship with it because it's way too vague and misused, and volcanic wine is becoming very popular. Of course, I make volcanic wine because it's grapes that are grown on 2 to 5 million-year-old volcanic bedrock with a thin topsoil, about 24 inches, and right underneath that is all white. It looks like, I mean, it's ash, it's tough. That's why our road right here that we're on is called Chalk Hill Road, but it's not chalk, it's volcanic ash. But the love-hate relationship comes with it being overused. And what people, folks think about is that, like, the wine is drawing, you know, minerality from the being embedded in ash. But the important part about volcanics is that it's just a really nutrient-deprived, kind of withholding, sort of a stingy soil. So its main effect is that it naturally stresses the vines. You end up with lower yields and more concentrated aromas in your fruit. And that's what I think of in terms of volcanics.
Okay, hello, I'm Giovanni Folonari, a wine producer from Tuscany, Italy. And today I wanted to tell you about two words that I always use to define the wines. Elegance and identity. These two are the most important thing that a wine should have today to be successful. Elegance, because you need to be able to drink the wine, enjoy it, possibly with food, and not just drink a sip of it and just leave it in the glass. Identity, because there is so many wines around out there. that if you have a wine that is just ordinary, even if it's good wine, people are not going to remember it. And thank God we have a few things that really help for identity in our case. One is our region, Tuscany, and one is the fact that we have a great variety that we grow in Tuscany that is called Sangiovese. And both of these, together and separately, I mean, we have great Cabernets or Merlots produced in Tuscany, they give identity to our wines, which make them stand out. So these are the two words that are winners for me.
Hello, my name is Tom Mortimer, and I'm the owner and founder of Loketo Vineyard in Dundee, Oregon. My word to talk about is aromatics. And aromatics for Pinot Noir is incredibly important. It's why we have this great big glass that's a big bowl to try to get the great scents and nose that comes off of Pinot Noir. I often think that people have different preferences, but also people read senses differently. So what I might detect and what you might detect could be quite different. With aromatics, what we're looking for are just beautiful smells that are compelling, perfume, things of that sort. And how we make the wine, where the fruit comes from, what clones we use, the type of oak, the way we make the wine influence ultimately the aromatics, which is half of what Pinot Noir is all about.
I'm Tom Rinaldi, been making wines in Napa Valley for more than 40 years, and my term is going to be kitty litter box, as a polite way of calling Sauvignon Blancs that have that cat pee aroma. So it's a term that comes out from time to time and generally avoidable, I hope, but that's my term of the day.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2021.